there's one thing that we see happening again and again in the gospel accounts, the accounts of Jesus' life, it's that whenever Jesus turns up, or whenever Jesus is present, things happen. Whenever Jesus is present, people experience things. They experience good things. They experience unexpected things. They experience surprising things. They experience things like healing, acceptance, forgiveness. The Bible tells us, in his presence is fullness of joy. In Jesus' presence is fullness of joy. That's the experience of Jesus being present. And today we're going to read about how this impacts on the life of just one woman. And today's reading, I've always found one of the most precious of readings in Scripture. See what you think. It's in Luke's Gospel. It's chapter 7. If you want to follow in the church Bibles, it's on page number 1036. So it's Luke's Gospel, chapter 7, and we're reading from verse 36 to the end of the chapter. It's the bit that's headed, Jesus is anointed by a sinful woman. So here we go. Now one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. So he went to the Pharisee's house, and he reclined at the table. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of a woman she is, that she is a sinner." Jesus answered him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii." A denarii is about a day's wages. So one owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he canceled the debts of them both. Now, which of them will love him more?" Simon replied, "I suppose the one who had the bigger debt canceled." "You've judged correctly," Jesus said. Then he turned towards the woman and said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not pour oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, for she loved much. But he who has forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." The other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this who even forgives sins?" But Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." The contrast at the very beginning of the passage is really quite striking. You've got Simon the Pharisee. I was talking a bit about Pharisees last week, how Pharisees, their life's ambition was to keep the law of Moses, to be righteous in God's eyes. So here's Simon the Pharisee. He's a good person. He goes to great pains to, to keep God's laws, and he's a very respectable person, an upstanding person in the community. So we've got Simon, and then we've got this woman. And all we're told about her is that she's a sinful woman. So he's a woman who everybody knows, just like everybody knows Simon is respectable, everybody knows this woman is a sinful woman. We also know that because she's a sinful woman, she is not the sort of woman that you'd want to be associated with. We don't know what it is that she's done or is doing wrong. We're not told that. But we do know that she's the sort of person that no one wants to be associated with. Maybe you know someone like that. Maybe you've heard of someone like that. Maybe you've experienced that yourself sometime because of something you've done. I get the feeling that her life is not a very happy one. You see, sin can be defined as much by the impact it has on the sinner as by the impact it has on the person who's sinned against. Obviously, if you're sinned against, you feel hurt, you feel, you know, you feel angry, and it has an impact on you. But it also has an impact on the sinner. It may be something, just a one-off thing, and we immediately regret that we said it or done it. It may be just a pattern of life that we've fallen into, and we just feel we can't get out of it. But the result is the same. It drains the joy out of our lives. It drains the color out of our lives, because that's the effect that sin has on the sinner. We try to pretend otherwise, but we're never really successful. That illustration Kenny gave, it's like we're carrying around this burden. We're just dying to put it down, but we don't know how to. It's the burden of guilt. It's the burden of remorse, of regret, of shame. And sin, as we can see from this passage, it doesn't just get between us and God, it gets between us and other people. The people we've hurt, the people who don't like us because of it, the people who despise us because of it, the people we've let down or betrayed or cheated on. It gets between us and them. So here's this sinful woman, someone who's stuck, she's trapped in a way of life she doesn't know how to get out of. And she's lonely, and she's miserable, and she's isolated, and she's despised. And I am sure that when she woke up that morning, the very last place she would have imagined she would end up in would be the house of Simon the Pharisee. And that shows you the difference Jesus can make. Remember what I said? Whenever Jesus is present, surprising things can happen. Try to imagine her. This is how I imagine it happening. She wakes up. It's still dark. She sneaks off to the market, head down, trying not to catch people's eyes. She knows what everybody thinks about her. It's a small town. She's in the market. She maybe hears a couple of the market traders talking. And they're talking about the fact that this man called Jesus is actually coming to their town. And her ears prick up. And they talk about the fact that he's actually going to be at the house of Simon the Pharisee. And you can imagine that sort of sense of, oh, that she gets. Because she's heard about Jesus. I mean, everybody talks about the amazing miracles Jesus does. But what really interests her is what everybody says that Jesus teaches people about God. Because Jesus teaches that God is a God who forgives. And no one else does. So she thinks, wow. And the one thing she wants to happen in her life, the one thing she wants to experience, above all things, is to be forgiven so that she can start again. So I can imagine her just dropping everything, or maybe turning around, hurrying back home, and thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I can't go there. I can't meet Jesus. I'm a sinful. What can I do? And then she goes into the back of her cupboard where she's really well hidden it, and she pulls out this very, very expensive. This is her life savings. It's invested in this alabaster jar of perfume. This is her pension plan. And she takes it with her, and she heads off to Simon the Pharisee's house. And I don't know why she takes the perfume with her. I don't think she even knows why she takes the perfume with her. But maybe she thinks she can use it to get past the minders on the door. Or maybe she thinks that when she meets Jesus, she can sort of offer it to him as a way of attracting his attention. And nor do I know, Lindsay and I were talking about this the other day, nor do I know how she actually managed to get in. Because if people had spotted her, they wouldn't have let her in. So I don't know how it happened. Maybe it was just the right moment. And she ends up in the same room as Jesus. Or maybe it's a courtyard, and there's a table, and there's all these important people in the whole town gathered. At least all the respectable side of town gathered. And there's Jesus reclining at this table. So he's sort of on one elbow. And she's crouching behind him, and no one has noticed her. And we don't know what he'd be teaching others. That's why he was invited. He was seen as a rabbi. He was expected to teach them about God and about God's kingdom. So he's teaching away, and we don't know what he was teaching. I imagine he's teaching from his collection of stories that he carries around with him. So he's taught them about the lost sheep. Or maybe it's the parable he tells about the unforgiving servant. I don't know. But whatever it is that he's saying, for this woman, it's like she's the only person in the room and he's speaking straight at her. I don't know if that's ever happened to you sometimes. You're just there as part of a service or something, and someone, it's like you're the only person there and the words are meant just for you. And what impresses her most of all about what she's hearing, it's as if Jesus is someone who understands. He's not like all the others who are very quick to judge. Here's someone who understands. And before she realizes it, the tears are pouring down her face. You know that kind of grief that sometimes you get that's very cathartic, where you just can't stop crying and it's like everything is pouring out. And she notices that their tears are actually dripping on his feet. So she's trying to wipe them with his hair. And he stops talking, and he turns and he looks at her. And it's how I imagine it is this. In that moment, looking into his eyes, she realizes that what he is offering is worth more than everything else she possesses. It's worth more than that. And before she realizes what she's doing, the precious vial of perfume is out and the cork has come off and she's pouring it on his feet. It's an act of reverence. It's an offering to someone who is worthy. And then suddenly the bubbles burst. It's no longer just her and Jesus in the room anymore, because the smell of the perfume is filling the whole house. I mean, it's really expensive perfume. And now everybody stopped talking, and now everybody's looking at her. And Simon, well, we're told what he's thinking. He doesn't say this out loud, but we're told he's thinking, who let that woman in here? What is she doing? Why is Jesus allowing her to touch him? Why doesn't he say anything? So all these thoughts are whirling through Simon, the perfect host's mind. He's trying to think, how can we deal with this? How can we manage it? Maybe, you know, I can't do anything. It's Jesus in charge. What's going to happen? And Jesus does say something. But what he says is not what Simon expects him to say. He tells a story. Simon, I've got a story to tell you. Simon's still pretending to be polite, you know, while underneath he's in a complete turmoil at his house being desecrated by this awful woman. Yes, Lord, what is it you have to say to me, he says. And Jesus tells him a story about someone who has been forgiven a huge amount and someone else who has been forgiven just a small amount. And he says, Simon, which of these will love me more? Which of these will love me more? Whenever I read this story, I'm reminded of someone I knew as I know as Uncle Archie. It's as if Uncle Archie and this passage in Luke's Gospel are always there in my mind. So I think I've maybe told this once before to the kids, so forgive me if I'm telling it again. But it helps me make sense of this. You see, when I was a boy, there was a bunch of us. We were all missionary children, and we all boarded at this great big house in Lauder Road called Cunningham Home House. And it was a great big Edinburgh Grange house. It was owned by the Church of Scotland. Lots of bedrooms. And there were about, I think, a dozen of us at the time. And it was one of these houses with a posh front door and a drive. And you went in, and the hall stair was right in front of you. And halfway up the landing was this huge, great big stained glass window. I don't know if you've ever been in a house like that. Huge, great big stained glass window. And one day, I thought it would be a good idea to go out into the back garden with Andrew Brodie, who was one of the other lads who was living there, and have a game of cricket. So you're already ahead of me. Now, it was my idea, okay? And Andrew was quite easily led, and also really good with a cricket bat. And I can, in my defense, I can distinctly remember saying to him, Andrew, now, try and not hit this too hard. And I can remember Andrew saying, no, I won't, John. Thwack! And it sailed right over my head and smash right through the stained glass window. Of course, my first impulse, as any's, would be to do a runner. So I did a runner. I sort of figured, well, he's holding the bat. Nothing I can do for him. But I quickly realized that actually it was my idea. And of course, Uncle Archie was utterly furious. He was utterly furious. Do you know how much this costs? What a stupid thing to do. What were you thinking? And I can remember, you know, sometimes you just, the burden descends. This is all my fault. I remember sitting in my room with a paper and pencil, working out how much pocket money it would take to replace this. And I worked out it would take about 2.5 years' worth of pocket money. But I was serious. You know, I felt bad, and I thought, well, someone's got to pay for this. And I remember going to see Uncle Archie, and I'd sitting down and explaining to him, worked it all out, and I was quite happy not to have pocket money for the next 2.5 years. And I can remember Uncle Archie listening to me. Uncle Archie was a scary person. And he was listening to me, and then he started to smile. And he said, it's all right, John, I've got this one covered. And I can remember how that felt. And I can remember how I'd always thought that Uncle Archie was a sort of gruff person, but at that moment I realized that underneath his gruffness, there was a lot of love. There was a big heart, and not just for me, but for all of us. If you're looking for one thing that sets the teachings of Jesus apart, if you're looking for one thing that takes Jesus and puts him on a different plane from anything else you will ever hear from anyone in the world, then it's not things that people often think of. It's not things like the golden rule that he quotes. It's not that. It's what he has to say about forgiveness. That's what sets him apart. And that's what makes our faith something that is good news for the world. What happened that day in Simon's house, I think of as a resurrection moment. It was in that woman's life, it was a resurrection moment. She was dead, and she was raised to life. She was set free from her sinful past so that she could live again. We don't know what happened to her after that, but I'd like to think that she was one of the women who followed Jesus to Jerusalem. She was one of the women who were part of the early church. We don't know her name, so we can't check, but that's what I like to think. Why did she love him so much? I don't think she loved him so much just because he had taken her side and forgiven her, where everybody else was just judging her. I don't think that's why she loved him so much. I think that would have helped. But I think the reason she loved him so much was because forgiveness is not cheap. Forgiveness causes hurt. Sin causes hurt. It has consequences. It's not cheap. It does damage. You can't just sort of brush everything under the carpet. There's a price that has to be paid for forgiveness. And I think that day she had some sort of prophetic insight into how much the forgiveness that Jesus was offering her was going to cost him. And that's why she loved him. And as I said at the beginning, to me, this is just one of those really, really precious, precious, precious stories in the Bible. One of the most precious stories of all of Scripture. Because it takes us to the very heart of what it is that we believe and the difference it makes in our lives. And it's very, very challenging. Like for me, it makes me wonder how much I love God. Because how much we love him is a measure of how much we realize we've been forgiven by him and how much it has cost him. So am I like the woman or am I like Simon the Pharisee? See, it's really challenging. It also makes me wonder how much I am willing to share this precious thing called forgiveness. How much I want to keep it to myself. I mean, we all love being forgiven, but how quick are we to forgive? You see, when God forgives us, he lifts that burden from our shoulders. That's what that woman experienced that day. That's what I'm sure we've all experienced. When God forgives us, the burden is gone. The joy returns. So if we are willing to forgive someone else, we are lifting their burden from their shoulders. We're allowing them to experience what we are experiencing. And yes, sometimes it's not easy, but that's what God's calling us to do. And with his help, it's not impossible. On the radio on Friday morning, Radio 4, Lindsay and I were listening, and there was a sort of extended interview with Frank, that was conducted by Frank Gardner with a priest from the Egyptian Coptic Church. There was the Coptic Bishop of London was being enthroned that day, so they made a big thing of it, particularly because the Coptic Church in Egypt are being cruelly targeted by Islamic extremists. Almost every month there's something in the news. And Frank Gardner was interviewing this priest from the Egyptian Coptic Church, the Christian church there. And as the interview progressed, you realized that the priest his granddaughter and his daughter. His granddaughter had actually been killed, and his daughter had been terribly disfigured in a bomb blast when some Islamic extremists planted a bomb outside their Coptic church. And so Frank Gardner's interviewing him. Now, Frank Gardner himself has experienced what it's like to be on the receiving end of extremist violence, because he himself was part of a group in Riyadh a few years ago that was attacked by gunmen, and he himself was badly injured, so much so that when he does his reporting, you probably notice this, he's always in a wheelchair. So he knows what that's like. But what is astonishing him as he's talking to this Christian priest is that this Christian priest is willing to forgive the people who did this to his family. And you can hear it in Frank Gardner's voice, how moved he is by the fact that the priest talks about praying for the souls of the people who did this. And he says, well, why? He says, well, because that's what Jesus asks us to do. And, you know, it's one of the most powerful witnesses to our faith. In Egypt, the strength of faith of those Coptic Christians is amazing and hard to argue against. It's so powerful. It's not easy to do, but it's such a powerful witness. It makes the presence of Christ real. As I said, wherever Jesus went, surprising things happened. And wherever the risen Jesus is present today, surprising things still can happen, like forgiveness. Earlier today, we prayed, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who sin against us. It's a prayer of intent. It's one that sets us apart. It's one that makes us different. It's one that reveals what lies at the very heart of our faith. It reveals what God is calling us to make known, what God is calling us to make real in the lives of the people we encounter, which is his forgiveness and his love. So let's just take a moment now, and I want you just, if you can, to close your eyes and try imagine something. I want you to imagine the house of Simon the Pharisee, and imagine that you are there that day. And ask yourself, which of the people there are you? Do you imagine yourself as Simon the Pharisee? Do you imagine yourself as the sinful woman? And imagine that Jesus now turns and looks at you. You're the person he's talking to. You're the person he's looking at. And he's asking you something. He's asking, is there anything in your past that you want to be free of? What are you going to say? And whatever you have said, imagine you're hearing his words now. Go in peace. Your faith has saved you. And now, we need to ask ourselves, is there anyone in our life who has wronged us and is still carrying that burden of guilt around with them? Maybe someone who, an ex-colleague or an ex-friend or a neighbor, a member of the family. Maybe an enemy who's deliberately done us wrong. What is God saying to us today? And what are we going to do about it?